Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up on the south side of Chicago and worked as a bagger for Jewel Food Stores. He graduated from Western Michigan University and began working for the Chicago White Sox in 1978 for $8,000 per year. In 1991, as general manager, he formed the Florida Marlins and led them to a World Series championship in 1997. Since 2002, he's been the president and general manager of the Detroit Tigers. The architect of the Tigers? His name, Dave Dombrowski. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the architect of the Detroit Tigers, Dave Dombrowski. Dave, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Well, thanks, Jack. It's nice to be here with you.
First, I'd like to say thank you. To you and your entire team, front office, back office, the team, the players, for the joy and great memories that you've given the people of Michigan and Tiger fans throughout the land these past 12 years.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's been a fun time period, particularly over since about 2006 when the club started to come back. A tremendous organization in every respect, and there's so many people behind the scenes that nobody ever sees. And, of course, we're always led by our owner, Mike Gillidge, who makes everything possible for us. So we've got a great combination, and now our ultimate goal is to win that world championship for everybody.
Just like you led the Marlins to. In high school, Oak Lawn, you were a bagger for Jewel Food Stores. What did bagging at Jewel Food Stores teach you about running and leading a baseball team?
Well, I don't know how much correlation is there, but I would say it was more a situation where one thing you wanted to make sure was to get your education so you could get the job that you wanted to do. That was something that my dad had always told me at an early age because he didn't have a college education and went to work every single day at a car dealership. He was a parts department manager, and he always emphasized, make sure you get your education. And working there at Jewel, it did a couple things. One, you worked hard. You were polite to people. When you bagged their groceries, if you brought them out to the car and you were nice to them, a lot of them gave you that dollar tip, which was very nice at the time. But it was a situation that really started you off and just trying to get out into the workforce and start to build a work ethic as far as preparing for your ultimate career.
Maybe in Beverly and Oak Lawn, they gave you the dollar tip. In Montreal, they gave you a nickel tip. You know? The baseball winter meetings, 1978, you save all the money you have and you go to those meetings. Talk about that experience.
Well, it was in my senior year in college, and I had been at Western Michigan University, and while there was in the Honors College writing a paper called The General Manager, The Man in the Middle, which was a story about the position of general manager and how it evolved throughout history. And things that had changed the position. While doing that paper, I interviewed many different general managers, sent them a questionnaire, and in turn, when doing the questionnaire, they had recommended to me to go to the winter meetings if you were going to try to get a job in baseball, because that was my ultimate goal. So a lot of my money that was saved up in bonds at that time for my grandparents and birthdays throughout the time period, I somehow, through some not easy negotiations, convinced my mom that it was all right to fund those in for dollars in order to pay for what I thought was an investment in my career at that time. So I flew out to the winter meetings my senior year at college at Western Michigan. My professors were tremendous for me because they allowed me to change my final schedule in order to make that work. And so I flew out there with the ultimate idea of trying to find a job in professional baseball. And so while I was out there, I met Roland Hemond, who at that time was the general manager of the White Sox. I had met Roland before for the paper, and he had made that recommendation to me to go out to Hawaii. So he was somewhat startled when he ran into me in the lobby at the hotel, and I expressed to him what I was out there trying to do. And he said, well, see me tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. I have a thought for you. And so sure enough, the next morning at 8 o'clock, I showed up. He wasn't there immediately, and I thought, oh, a lot of times people make these recommendations. They don't show up necessarily at the time. But he was there about 15 minutes later and kind of took me under his wing. There was a job that had opened at that time with the White Sox organization, an entry-level position, and he ended up interviewing me later that day, introducing me to various people within the Chicago White Sox organization. A week after my return from Hawaii, I ended up interviewing with Bill Veeck, Rudy Schaefer, who was the business manager with the White Sox at that time, and Mike Veeck, Bill's son, and eventually ended up with my foot in the door with my first job with the White Sox organization.
They offered you $7,500. Your agent, your dad, said, son, you got to get $8,000 to make a living. Talk to us about Bill Veeck.
Well, it was a situation where, of course, he was a legend even at that time, and I was a youngster, but it was a situation where when you met him, you could not but be amazed at being around him. He had a certain presence, extremely intelligent, but not only intelligent about baseball, but about life in general. He was a person that, as people would that know Bill, had blown off his leg in the war. So he had a peg leg. And with that time period, he had to soak his peg leg for a couple hours a day in a bathtub. And during that time period, he spent endless hours reading books. That's what Bill did. He read book after book after book. And he said he never started a book that he didn't finish. But it would not only be on baseball. We're talking about any different topic that you could possibly think. It could be about growing trees. It could be about planting flowers. It could be about electricity. And Bill was so well-read, so well-versed, that he was just an extremely interesting man. At that time, we had a very small front office. Very few people worked in the front office, so you were included in everything that took place. He used to treat you like family, pay you very little, as you mentioned. The $8,000 a year was a break-even point for me, actually, to get started in professional baseball. My dad had told me at that time, go ahead and you can take the job, but you can't lose money. You're just getting your college education. You can't lose money. And they allowed me to make the $8,000 a year. But it was a situation. He was a fascinating man. He challenged you. He included you. And to me, I could not have been more fortunate, because when you start your working, it was like getting a doctorate degree, when working for Bill Veeck and Roland Heeman and being around those type of individuals.
We're talking to Dave Dombrowski. When we come back, we'll ask him about leading the Florida Marlins to the World Series championship in 1997. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Dave Dombrowski, President and CEO of the Detroit Tigers for the last 12 years. You go with Florida Marlins in 91, help form them, and in 97, you win it all. What was that like?
Well, the two experience. One, starting a franchise was a real challenge. It was a lot of fun. When I started in professional baseball way back when, and you have goals, and people ask you, what are your goals? I used to always say, well, I'd like to get started in baseball. I'd like to be a general manager. I'd like to win a world championship. I'd like to be in a position where you had a good club year in and year out to be a perennial type of contender for a championship. And so at that time, having the ability to start a franchise from the very beginning was thrilling, because you got a chance to hire everybody. You were involved in an expansion draft. Had a chance to put in your philosophies, a chance to grow yourself where you would want to, at what pace, with ownership and the people that were involved. So it was a tremendous experience. Wayne Huizenga owned the team at that time. Wayne was a businessman. He started sports, getting involved in sports through the urging of a good friend of his, Carl Barger, who was the first president of the Florida Marlins, that unfortunately passed away before we played a game. But he basically let you run the franchise as long as you were within your financial limitations at that time. We had always talked about starting the farm system first, building the back basically the basic background that you needed, the development process, before you really spent a lot of money at the major league level. So we invested a lot in player development, in scouting, in Latin American operations. We were very aggressive in signing young players to bring them on board. And that's really how we proceeded and also approached the expansion draft to try to build with drafting a lot of good young players. So as that organization grew and we start getting better and better, the philosophy was always at some point we would go ahead and add some veteran talent to our big league club. And after a few years in progress, we were making progress on the field. And at that point, Wayne said, okay, let's go try to do it. And we went out and we tried to do it. And we ended up bringing some people on board, people like, at that year, Moises Alou and Alex Fernandez and Bobby Bonilla and Jim Eisenreich and John Cangelosi were our real good players off the bench. The year before, we had already added Kevin Brown and Al Leiter, and all of it came together. And the best way I could describe is that for people that are involved professionally, when you win the world championship, it is the ultimate feeling. There is no tomorrow. You're not thinking about tomorrow's game. At that point, you can let out every bit of emotion that you've stored throughout the years that you've kept inside, and you can let it loose. And that's how it felt when we won in 97. It was an extra inning win. It was a phenomenal game. One of the best games probably played in the history of baseball. Game 7, 11 innings, and we beat the Cleveland Indians. And just the ultimate experience that you could possibly have.
And 4 years later, Mr. I calls you up and convinces you to become the president of the Tigers. Why did you take the job?
Well, at the time, there were some things. I was very happy with the Marlins. They had treated me very well. After we won the World Championship in 97, Wayne Huizenga had decided to sell the team. He was the businessman, and he felt that he was in for a losing proposition financially in owning the Marlins. So he ended up selling the club. He sold it to John Henry, who ultimately is now the owner of the Boston Red Sox. And John was from South Florida. He lived there at that time. And his ultimate goal at that time was to not only win with the Marlins, but he knew he needed to get a new ballpark at that time. We were playing at a football stadium and Pro Player Stadium, Dolphin Stadium. It's been called various things where the Dolphins played. But it really was not conducive to the atmosphere that you would ultimately like for a baseball stadium. It was a football stadium. Unfortunately, he failed in that ability to try to get a new ballpark built. He then, in turn, decided he was going to sell the franchise himself. And we had a great relationship. Basically, at that time, he said, Dave, I've made this decision. I'm not going to get the ballpark built here. You can stay with me if you want. I'm not sure where my next step is, but I would recommend to you to listen to other jobs out there, because if I keep the team, we're going to break it up again. And you've been through that once. I hate to see you go through that again. And I really don't know where the future's going here. So at that point, I said, well, if that's what you think, it was hard. I remember going home and talking to my wife, Carrie, and said that this is the situation. She said, well, can't we stay and keep the people together? And I said, well, I wish we could, but that's not an option. So at that point, there were three general manager's jobs or president jobs available in baseball. We're talking about the middle of October. I interviewed with the Texas Rangers, the Toronto Blue Jays, and here with the Detroit Tigers. And I met with Mr. I. And really, he just kind of wooed us as far as why this was such a great opportunity. His track record spoke for itself with hockey. They've been so successful in hockey. And he had really told us about how he had that same vision for his baseball team. And so we met with him, was really impressed with him. You could tell he was aggressive and wanted to win. And so with that, he made the offer. And to me, it was the best opportunity of the situations. And so decided to bring my wife, two young children at that time, and it was a great opportunity for us and one that really worked out well.
Jim McKay used to say, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. 1997, you win it all. 2003 with the Tigers, 119 losses, within one of the worst record ever in the history of baseball of any team. Dave Dombrowski, how did you get through that season?
Well, it was painful. I guess is the best way to describe it. But
it was like being a Cubs fan for the last 105 years.
I think that the salvation was having won in 97 and seen what take place. Also, the foundation when we left the Marlins was also in place for them to win another world championship, which happened very quickly. So you knew that with the right people around you, you could build a franchise. It was a situation where when we came in Detroit, not knowing as much about a franchise organization that you would when you're not there. But the Tigers were not successful for many years. You knew that there had to be a reason. So when we came on board and all of a sudden you start looking at the reasons, you knew you were not close to winning at that time. When I came in here with some of my trusted lieutenants, with John Westhoff, Scott Reed, some of our scouts, Al Avila joined us. We just did not have the foundation of talent at that time to be successful. So at that time, we figured, well, let's do whatever we can to try to, after we've evaluated, break it down and then build it back up. However, there is one adage, and being a baseball fan, you know, Tommy Lasorda always used to say, you're going to win 54, you're going to lose 54, and it's the middle 54 that make the difference. Tommy's a good friend and a Hall of Famer and somebody I respect a great deal, but he was wrong because you don't always win 54, I found out. And it was a trying time because we were historically bad. And you knew you were going to have to take a step back. Really, if you looked at 108 losses, the difference between 108 and 118 or 19 is not all that much because if you lose, you lose. However, when you get to those historical aspects and people are following you along those lines, it makes it a little bit more painful. But fortunately, somehow, we put a winning streak on at the end of the season. We avoided the losing record, the all-time record, and were able to live through it and start to build from there.
We're talking to Dave Dombrowski. When we come back, a quote. Signing Pudge Rodriguez in 2004 was the most important moment of the rebuild. We'll ask him about that. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Dave Dombrowski, who's in his 34th season of professional baseball and is the third longest tenured general manager in baseball today. Signing Pudge, why so important in 2004?
Well, there were a couple reasons behind it. First of all, we were bad at that time, and we are starting to try to come back. We were a destination here with the Tigers that good players did not want to play here. So when they had a chance to choose where they would like to play, we were a last destination. As we said at that time, we would talk internally, we couldn't even get the agents of decent players to call us back. Club wasn't playing well, we weren't drawing well, and we were envisioned as a club, an organization that just wasn't very good, and we're just trying to build back. Pudge, at that time, was still an all-star player. Everybody knew Pudge. He was a national celebrity. He had just come off winning a world championship with the Florida Marlins at that time. So having him come on board and being open-minded to play with the Detroit Tigers was very important. So what happened is when he came, and of course he made us better, he was an outstanding player, still an all-star catcher, a guy that wanted to win. It opened the eyes to other people that if Pudge is willing to come there, well, maybe we should at least be open-minded to the possibility of it. So at that point, bringing Pudge on board was so important because he made us better, but he also opened the minds to other individuals that, hey, maybe there's a place we should think about. Detroit, even though it hasn't been good now, got a great facility, great owner, long tradition. And all of a sudden, it opened people's eyes.
Let's jump to 2006. Jim Leland's 60 years old. He hasn't managed for 6 years. He did win the World Series with the Marlins under you, 2 NL Manager of the Year awards, 3 divisional championships, but the man hadn't managed in 6 years. Why'd you hire him?
Well, actually, that was one of the easier decisions for me that I probably have had with the Tigers and throughout my career. I knew Jim Leland very well. We started working together back with the Chicago White Sox back in the early 80s. Tony La Russa hired Jim as our third base coach, and we spent a lot of time together. I was very fortunate early in my career. You stop and you think that the manager of the Chicago White Sox was Tony La Russa, one of the all-time greats. Jim Leland was his third base coach, who ends up in the top 15, 16 all-time of winning. We used to talk baseball hour after hour after hour, not only then, but after games, during spring training. I was single. They were away from their families. You just talk so much baseball. They were so knowledgeable about the game, so I got to know Jim very well. Jim is one of the smartest baseball men you will ever meet. He's recognized in that capacity by basically anybody that knows him in the game of baseball. Very well respected by the players as well as management people and other managers. The only thing that happened to Jim, and he decided to take a step back, was he had just really tired out at that time. He's a type A personality. He was in a position where he just ran himself to the point of being on fumes. But I also stayed in touch with Jim. We became good friends. We would talk often. And the reality was, if Jim Leland is in a position that his mindset is, hey, I'm ready to manage again, you knew he would be a good manager. He had the ability to communicate with young and old. He had 2 young children that kept him young, kept him sort of contemporary in dealing with individuals. Continued to talk to him. He was abreast of what was taking place because he was helping with the Cardinals, helping them during spring training, working with Tony and Walt Jocketty, who was the general manager of the Cardinals at that time, very good friend. And he had the passion back. So when he had the passion and fire, it was really a very easy decision, because if he had that, you knew he'd be a good manager.
You mentioned that back then, agents of good players wouldn't return your phone calls. Today, many general managers won't return Dombrowski's phone calls because you hoodwink them so much. Some facts. You've made 7 trades for 10 players on the current roster. You've traded 17 players, and here's who you've gotten. Miggy, Max, Sanchez, Doug Fister, Austin Jackson, Peralta, Jose Iglesias, Infante, Veras, and Coke. Dave, how do you do it time after time?
Well, there's a lot of things that end up happening, but it's basically having good people in your organization. We have tremendous scouts, people that help me. So I think you have a foundation of evaluators that are very highly respected and do a good job. We've been in a position where, with Mr. I's support, we've been willing to take on some payroll at times when people have been moving it. So, for example, a Cabrera, a Sanchez, those individuals coming on board, Infante at key times, Peralta. So sometimes you're in a position of dealing from strength with your young players. You should know your own young players better than anybody else. Now, some of them that we've traded that have not panned out and played as well as anticipated, we thought were better at the time when we were trading them. But it's just worked out where, for whatever reason, they have not reached their upper levels of capabilities. But it really comes down to that we have a lot of good people. I think you have to be ready to pull the trigger when it happens. You have to be well prepared. When you've done it for a long time, I think you have a lot of information stored up. You know who some of the better players are. And our guys, when we come to make a trade, they're ready to do so.
Since 1869, 144 seasons of baseball, 14 players have won a triple crown, where they've led the league in home runs, RBIs, and batting average. Miggy won it 2 years ago. If it hadn't been for the groin, he would have won it again, possibly. Talk to us about how good Miggy is.
Well, he is just special. I mean, when you start talking about that, those names and what he's accomplished, he is one of the greatest hitters of all time. Now, he doesn't have that total package yet in the sense because he has only played till he's 30 at this point. But when you start adding another 5, 6, 7 years and he continues to put up the numbers he's putting up at this time, he will be one of the greatest hitters of all time. And I think it comes down to there's so much that's involved in that. His pure talent, he's smart up there, he works hard, he's driven. But when you describe Miggy, you talk about a great hitter that has power. You normally don't describe him as just a power hitter. There's not many players that are like that, and yet he's has so much power. When you look at the way he drives the ball to the opposite field, there's very few players that have ever been capable of doing that. So you're just talking about one of the greatest hitters of all time, and sometimes I think when people watch him, he does it so easily, they don't realize what they're watching. But this person is a treat to watch day in and day out, and the best way to describe it is, if you're a baseball fan, don't ever miss one of his at-bats because you never know what will take place.
Speaking of great players, Mr. Tiger L. Kaline. Dave Dombrowski, what's the biggest thing you've learned from L. Kaline?
Well, there's a lot of them. He's been so helpful to me because knowing the tradition here and being part of this organization, he can give me insight on so many things that other people cannot. He has seen the good times. He's seen the bad times. He has seen the city here where it's just been a tremendously supporting a club, been part of world championships. But I think that the best thing that I've learned from Al Kaline is class. And so when you look at Al Kaline and you're in a position where you talk to Al Kaline, he is class personified. And so when somebody can have the success that he has, handle himself the way he has, and be in that position, you can't but help notice what he's accomplished and doing it in such a first-class fashion. And I think, to me, that is the ultimate that I've learned from Al Kaline.
We're talking to Dave Dombrowski, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dave Dombrowski. Since 2006, he's led the Tigers to 3 playoff appearances and to the World Series in 2006-2012. September 7th, 2013, you're in Kansas City, and over a cup of coffee, the skipper, Jim Leland, tells you he's planning to retire. Dave, what did you say to Jim Leland?
Well, it was, first of all, he did most of the talking because we know Jim. And I've known Jim for so long that you get to know, you just instinctively know individuals. In Jim's case, I remember I was sitting upstairs at the hotel. It was early on a Saturday morning. The phone rings, wants to talk to me about something. My cell phone rang. Sure, come on up. No problem. But that's not normal for Jim Leland to do that on a Saturday morning like that. So for me, I thought, well, something's up here. I'm not sure really what it is. But in the case here with Jim, I listened. And in observing throughout the year, you could see that even though he had the passion, that he was starting to get a little bit more tired. I've seen it throughout the years. Nothing that he couldn't perform the job. But you could just see it. So when he told me that, I basically, as I've described to people, was surprised and yet not shocked. He had to fight back some tears. He had some tears. And I basically said, Jim, for you, whatever's good for you, whatever you think is the best thing for you, you have my support. You know you have Mike Gillage's support. And let's win this thing for you. Let's do whatever we can. He says, oh, you've got everything I need. You got all of me this next couple months. So no question of that. There's no doubt about it. But it was a situation where basically I thanked him, said, let's go win this thing, and then offered him whatever he needed at that point to try to get through the time.
Speaking of Kansas City, tomorrow we open against Kansas City. What's your prediction, Dave Dombrowski, for the 2014 season?
We have a good club. We have a very good team. We'll play well. I've always been in a position to say, well, I'm not going to predict how we finish, because the reality is that takes care of itself on the field. Kansas City has one of the best ball clubs in our division. They've improved themselves a great deal. They were improved last year. But I think we'll be in there all along. We have as good a shot as anybody to win our division. If you win your division, anything can happen in a short series in the postseason. So I think it'll be an entertaining year. People will enjoy watching us play, and it should be fun.
Our new skipper. All the women are ecstatic because he's so handsome. All right? I never looked that good, even in my dreams. Talk to us about Brad Ausmus.
Brad Ausmus, somebody I didn't know at all, other than shake his hand before the interview process started back in early November of last year. He's a very impressive individual. He is extremely intelligent, Dartmouth graduate, but he doesn't act intelligent. He can relate to anybody and communicate with anybody. Very good family man, good values, very knowledgeable baseball individual, far beyond his years of age. He is a guy that can communicate with the young players, with the veteran players, and with people in the front office. He is driven. He's passionate. He understands and communicates well with those individuals. But yet he's also, I think, can get his point across from a leadership perspective, but doesn't have to rant and rave. I think he is a very good person to lead a younger teams in today's world, younger people. And I think he's going to do a very good job for us. I've built a great deal of respect for him as time has gone on. Nothing he has really done has surprised me tremendously, because when you do your background check on an individual and you get a chance to talk to others about him, but he has lived up to everything that everybody has told me about him.
Max Scherzer, you signed him to a one-year deal, $15.5 million. That's a lot of S&H green stamps. $15.5 million.
Well, very good pitcher last year. It is a lot of money, but the market for good players nowadays, they pay a lot of money for those spots. He's a guy we would like to keep in the organization for a long time. But when you look at some of the other signings out there and some of the top people, Max Scherzer's a Cy Young Award winner, pitched tremendously the last couple of years. So he's in a situation where he's earned it, he's deserved it per the baseball standards. It's hard to sometimes relate to those dollars, but that's what the going rate of a Cy Young Award winner after 5 years in the major leagues is.
Speaking of great pitchers, Cy Young Award winner, Justin Verlander. Is the romance with Kate Upton on or off?
Well, I don't know. That's a great question.
Have you ever met her?
In passing, one time. Just in passing. She's been around much more, but since I don't really hang around with the players, but I did meet her one time in passing. She is as attractive as people talk about. But it's a situation, I read a lot about those things, but I don't ask the players in particular about their love life, so I'm not sure where that one stands at this particular moment.
The team members behind the scenes, front office, advanced scouts, trainers, talk to us about all of the unknown people that make this team.
Well, there's so many people there, and when you start naming individuals, you end up missing them. But when you start talking about Al Avila, my right-hand man, assistant vice president, assistant general manager, John Westhoff, our vice president, baseball legal counsel, they're the two on the baseball end of the operation that I work with most closely day in and day out. But then you have individuals that head our scouting department, David Chad and his group of scouts. Scott Reed heads our professional scouting aspect of it. We're in a spot where we have a lot of good people out there. And then from the business end of it, Dwayne McLean and Steve Quinn from the finance, they also do a tremendous job. You have a Kevin Rand. And there are so many different areas that people don't realize that make a successful organization. A good trainer like Kevin Rand, well, extremely valuable. A director of your physical fitness, Javar Gillette, extremely important. He's in charge of keeping people in shape, dietary aspects of it. You even get to the point of working with your doctors, people like a Dr. Workings or Dr. Lemos. All of those people are what make a successful organization. And your scouts, they're the unsung heroes, your scouts and player development people, because they never get any credit out there. And yet, if they're not successful and they're not good in their job, you're cooked as an organization. You will not be successful. They are the backbones of a good organization.
Who do you like in the National League this year?
Well, a couple clubs in the National League that stand out, I think, all the time. You look at what the Dodgers have done with their pitching. They're really good. They're in a spot where they have an all-star type laden team. They're good. Washington's a very good club, too. Last year, they didn't make the postseason, but they have some talent, and they have a very deep pitching staff. And I think the St. Louis Cardinals are at this point, they are a good organization, a good club, and a lot of good young players. So they have a lot of good things taking place for them right there. So I would think that those are three of the top teams in the National League.
You didn't mention my Cubs. We got no free agents. We were lousy last year, once again. No free agents. The only change we've made is a new mascot. Wait till 2015.
Yeah, but as you know, Jack, they're building for the future now. And so they're adding some good young talent within the system. And for Cub fans, there is some hope there in the future.
We've been hearing that for 105 years. Okay, as our time winds down, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
Well, our young listeners, I think the advice I'd give them most of all is pursue your passion. Whatever you like, go for it. I think it's extremely important that you're in a spot where in today's world there are so many different opportunities. It's a changing world. Pursue what you want to do. It will make your life happy. You'll be in a spot where you can do day in and day out what you want to do. But don't take rejection and then just stop. A lot of people get rejected when they try to pursue things. But if it's your passion and that's what you want to do, go for it.
And emanate Dave Dombrowski, a man of class, honesty, and tremendous humility. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jack. Thanks for having me.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahn.
Believe in yourself.